This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Think back to a time when you sat in a classroom and didn't understand what was happening. Maybe you wanted to ask a question but didn't. Maybe you looked around the room and everyone else seemed to understand. Or maybe they were pretending to. I've definitely been there. For a long time, I thought the difference between those students and me was intelligence. I assumed some people were simply smarter than others. But the more I reflected on my own experiences, the more I realized that intelligence didn't explain everything. This led me to asking myself the question, why do some students keep asking questions while others slowly stop believing in themselves? Some students confidently seek out new knowledge. Others stay quiet because they're afraid of getting the answer wrong. For some students, failing a test becomes motivation to improve. For others, it's the moment they begin believing they're simply bad at school. I began to wonder, if there was more to the story than intelligence alone, why do students with similar abilities seem to have completely different outcomes in their education? Today's podcast, we're talking about the idea of scholastic disposition and how that can have an impact upon the way that students experience education. Through research, reflection, and an interview with a teacher, I want to explore three main questions. What is scholastic disposition and how does it impact the learning of students? Why do students with similar abilities often have very different outcomes within their education? And finally, can scholastic disposition be developed, and why does that matter beyond education itself? Maybe success in education is not just a matter of intelligence. Maybe it's also a matter of how people respond to discomfort when they are attempting to learn something new. What is scholastic disposition and how does it impact student learning? When people hear the term scholastic disposition, they often think of something extremely academic and intimidating. However, the idea of scholastic disposition is also very human. Scholastic disposition is not your IQ, it's not your grades, it's not about whether you're naturally gifted in a particular subject. Scholastic disposition is actually more about how you approach the idea of learning itself. Are you someone who continues to learn despite the difficulties that you encounter? Do you ask for help when you're struggling to understand a particular concept? Are you someone who avoids challenges for fear of making mistakes or failing at completing a task? Or are you someone who sees mistakes as opportunities to improve a skill? School focuses a great deal on the ultimate goal of students, achieving great grades. However, the behaviours that feed into great grades are largely ignored. Imagine two students who both receive the same grade in a subject. One student may approach the subject with a love for learning and a desire to always improve their capabilities. Another student may approach the subject with a focus on avoiding failure altogether. Scholastic disposition impacts how students view themselves within the classroom over time. Instead of fearing the act of learning, students begin to embrace it, but only if they have the proper scholastic disposition. However, this notion of scholastic disposition is not limited to the classroom. It exists in other areas of our lives as well. For instance, within the realm of sport or music, scholastic disposition can be seen by observing how athletes or musicians of similar talents approach learning skills. One of the best examples of scholastic disposition outside the classroom is within swimming. Some athletes early on may appear to have a natural gift for swimming. However, others who may appear less gifted than the others will continue improving over time due to their scholastic disposition and willingness to learn sports skills despite the difficulties. Therefore, why do some individuals exhibit a willingness to continue learning a skill despite the difficulties of improving the skill, while others do not exhibit such a belief in themselves and their potential to improve their skills? A lot of this also connects to research done by psychologist Carol Dweck and her work around growth mindset. Dweck discovered that students can have either a fixed mindset or a growth mindset regarding their intellectual abilities. Students with a fixed mindset believe that their intellectual abilities are fixed and cannot be changed. Therefore, they may avoid challenges or situations in which they might struggle due to the belief that their abilities are not capable of fulfilling such challenges. Students with a growth mindset, on the other hand, believe that their intellectual abilities can grow and improve over time. According to research discussed in Stanford's Growth Mindset Resources, students who believe that their intelligence and intellectual abilities can grow are more likely to embrace challenges and continue to participate in tasks even after experiencing a setback. Interestingly, though, it is possible that the students who continue to learn the new skills and concepts are not necessarily the students with the highest levels of intelligence. Instead, they may have a growth mindset and understand that struggling with tasks is a normal part of the process of improving. Why do students with similar abilities often achieve very different outcomes? This is probably the question that interested me the most, because almost everyone has seen this happen. Two students who seem to have the same capacity into the year will see one improve dramatically, while the other loses confidence in their abilities. It's not a question of intelligence. A lot of learning involves emotion. Confidence, fear, motivation, comparison with others, and the ability to take failures as part of the learning process. One of the ideas regarding scholastic disposition is from psychologist Angela Duckworth. She discusses the concept of grit and how individuals who exhibit more grit and perseverance tend to have more long-term success in their education. However, people underestimate how uncomfortable the process of improving their skills is. Learning requires students to be confused sometimes, to make mistakes in front of their peers, to feel like they are behind other students, all while exhibiting perseverance in the tasks that they learn. Social media makes it harder for students to exhibit this process of learning. With social media, students are exposed to the achievement of their peers and how successful they are in their educational endeavours. However, people only see the results. They do not see the struggles that students have to endure to display such great results in their educational endeavours. Because of this, people begin to compare their skills and knowledge with others. They begin to feel bad about themselves and their skills. Instead of learning as a means of improving themselves, they begin to feel motivated to avoid feeling behind in their educational careers. For these reasons, many students begin to avoid the educational process altogether.
So I'm having my history teacher at Buller High School, who was the head of department of humanities, and I'm going to ask her a few questions on what she thinks about scholastic disposition. Do you want to say something about yourself?
My name's Jackie Christie Cumming. I've been teaching for just over 30 years. I've only ever taught in two schools. The first school was a bigger school in Nelson, and then I came to Buller High School 17 and a half years ago. So it was quite an adjustment from a big school to a small school. Some things are similar about schooling and learning, but some things are really different because every school reflects its community.
Yeah.
So, but I've loved my time here.
Moving on to the first question. What behaviours do you notice most often in students who improve over time?
I think the most noticeable thing is that they engage more actively in class. And I think part of that comes from greater resilience, more perseverance, that willingness to kind of like really get involved. And then that flows on to self-belief, confidence, improved sense of self-worth and self-esteem, and it becomes like a really positive merry-go-round rather than a whirlpool that it kind of like might have felt like to sort of start off with. So overall, that leads to being more focused, more productive. I think all of those things, they interplay with each other.
Yeah. Second question. Do you think mindset matters more than natural ability in the long term?
I absolutely do. I think your actual ability, like that, whatever you call it, natural ability, natural talent, etc., I think it gives you possibly a little bit of an advantage to start off with, but if you don't use it well, if you don't have the growth mindset, the can-do attitude, it's a bit like that saying in sport that says, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. And so I think that growth mindset is absolutely crucial for making the most of your talents, but it's also absolutely crucial if you are also a learner who struggles. That can-do attitude can really get you over some small and big mountains at times.
Next question. Why do you think some students respond positively to feedback while other students don't?
I think it depends on the student, and it also, I think, depends on what the feedback's about, the relationship you have with them, and how you deliver it. I think it's also tied up with how much worth a student themselves places on things like grades, and how they view mistakes.
Yeah.
If things don't go according to plan. If your self-worth is really tied up with grades, then often those mistakes are viewed as failure. But if your self-worth isn't so tied up with the actual grade and you're more focused on improvement and development, then those students tend to look at feedback quite differently. But I also think, because I've sort of had this situation recently where I've given feedback to a number of students and some have said, I thought it wasn't quite there yet, but, you know, thank you for the feedback, thanks for the opportunity. And they see it as an opportunity to improve. And then there's others who were devastated that it's not perfect right now.
Yeah.
And it's important for me, because I know those kids, to also allow them to kind of like embrace those emotions and just like have that moment of disappointment, then give them a sense of perspective that you haven't failed. There's some fine tuning, some tweaking, etc. But I do think there's that mix between it being very tied up with the importance that students might place on grades, but also sometimes it's how the teacher places importance on those grades as well, and then that can impact on how the student accepts the feedback. So I think we all have to get the balance right.
Leading kind of off of this, have you ever seen students completely change their attitude toward learning over time?
I've seen a small number of like complete turnarounds, like a student who was kind of like a holy terror in the junior school, didn't necessarily care about their own learning or the learning of others, and then almost like walk over a bridge from the junior school into the senior school and have a completely different approach. And a lot of that in those particular instances was actually tied up with things that were happening outside school that impacted on how they expressed themselves inside school. And it was also tied up for those particular students with, I think, us as educators thinking more holistically about what students need, rather than, one size fits all.
Yeah.
And I do think it's something that we've probably done better over time, and so that we are, you know, seeing, say, kind of like more students turn around. It doesn't happen every time, because there are so many different things at play. You know, the influence of, like, their whānau's attitude to education, their friends' attitude to education, the support network that they have around them, how they are respected and treated as an individual by their teachers, etc. But there have been some occasions of, like, big turnaround. You tend to see probably more small progressive changes.
Yeah.
But you can't help but remember how amazing those big turnarounds are.
Do you think schools focus too heavily on grades instead of learning behaviours?
Yes and no. I think, although it might seem like an answer kind of like sitting on the fence, I think it does depend on the focus of the school. I've been lucky enough to work in two schools that have what I, you know, would consider to be a holistic approach. The recognition that unless you support and address learning behaviours, then learning potential can't be maximised, because we don't live life in, you know, nice tidy little boxes, etc. Yeah. So I think we've got better and better over time at focusing on how we teach, not just what we teach. I think primary school teachers have always been well trained in that. I think high school teachers, we've improved in that sort of over time. That sort of recognising that I need to look at, you know, a student's kind of like sense of motivation, their self-belief, their self-esteem, where their self-managing behaviours are at, what support network they have around them. Otherwise, it's really difficult for the potential of learning to be maximised. I think for a question like that, it depends on really the approach of the school, the individual teachers, whānau. It's another one of those cases where it kind of like all interacts.
Last question. What advice would you give students who feel disconnected from learning or feel like they're bad at school?
I think, well, in terms of, like, I guess the self-preservation answer, just keep swimming. A day, a week, a month can seem at times like so incredibly hard, but you know, there's always a silver lining in there somewhere. To not compare yourself with other people. We all learn differently, at different rates, in different ways. Sometimes it takes some of us longer than others to find our kind of like our learning zone, the place where we can sort of like maximise things. To appreciate that it's not all about natural ability. Like, for me personally, I'm not the cleverest person in my whānau, but I'm hardworking. I always had perseverance. It was always important to me to have that sense of self-respect, that, you know, those moments you have where you can, you know, absolutely work your butt off and then you don't quite get there and then somebody else might get there a little bit easier. But accepting you can't do anything about those sorts of things, so don't worry about what other people are doing. Just kind of like find your own place. Sometimes it really helps to kind of like find your person at school. It could be a senior student, it could be a teacher, someone that you really respond to that can help you with your motivation and, you know, sort of like hanging in there when you sort of like feel that, you know, you need to be uplifted a bit. And that we're all good at something. And sometimes it just takes time to discover sort of like what that is.
Yep. All right, well, that's the whole interview. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Christian. Really thoughtful questions. I really appreciated actually the honesty to the opportunity to kind of like be honest and to kind of like think about how I would answer those questions, because sometimes we just kind of like take it for granted in teaching, especially if you've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to be able to reflect on those, so I really appreciate the questions. Thank you.
Alright, thank you. One of the ideas that stood out to me the most during my conversation with JCC was that while natural ability may provide some students with an initial advantage, it is ultimately their mindset that determines how far they can progress in their education. Natural talent can help students at the beginning of their learning journey, but if they are unwilling to work hard, embrace challenges, and step outside their comfort zone, they will eventually reach the limits of their talent. As JCC quoted, "Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard." I think this quote captures the idea perfectly. While talent may provide some students with an early advantage, it is their mindset that ultimately determines how much they grow and develop as learners. This perspective strongly connects with Carol Dweck's research on growth mindset. Dweck argues that students who believe their abilities can improve through effort are more likely to embrace challenges, learn from mistakes, and persist through setbacks than students who believe their intelligence is fixed. JCC also highlighted that this mindset is particularly important for students who struggle with a subject, as a positive attitude towards learning can help them overcome both small and significant challenges throughout their education. Listening to JCC's perspective reinforced the idea that scholastic disposition is not about being the smartest person in the classroom. Instead, it is about developing the confidence, resilience, and willingness to continue learning regardless of where a student begins. This naturally leads to my final question. Can scholastic disposition be developed, and why does it matter beyond education itself? I think the answer is yes. Because scholastic disposition isn't just about school. It impacts people throughout their lives, in sports, work, relationships, and personal growth. School ends, but learning does not. Therefore, the disposition that people develop towards challenges within school will impact the rest of their lives. The students who succeed are not the students who do not struggle with learning concepts. They are the students who learn how to stay in the learning process, even when it's uncomfortable. They understand that struggling does not mean they are unable to learn a concept. They understand that making mistakes does not mean they are incapable of learning a skill. They understand that improvement in a skill takes time and often is less visible than people would like it to be. After exploring the research, reflecting on my own experiences, and hearing JCC's perspective, I keep coming back to the same conclusion. Scholastic disposition isn't simply about how intelligent someone is. It's about how they approach learning when things become difficult. It's about whether they continue asking questions, accepting feedback, and believe that they can improve. Confidence determines whether students ask questions. Fear determines whether they take risks. comparison determines whether they feel capable at all. All of this shapes how students see themselves as learners over time. But maybe scholastic disposition is not something people are born with. Maybe students are not born as either good or bad learners. Maybe they simply learn how to grow in their ability to learn over time. School may eventually end, but learning doesn't. The way we respond to challenges, setbacks, and opportunities to improve stays with us long after we leave the classroom. Maybe the most important thing students should learn in school isn't the content of the subjects. Maybe it's learning how to keep learning.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.